Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Well, good evening, everybody. I would like to welcome you to Stop Child Abuse Now Talk Radio Show, sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennis. I am from Bellevue, Washington. On my host team this evening is John Anderson from Louisiana, Kim Lakin from Colorado. Thank you both very much for being here. Tonight is special guest night. It is Monday, September 20th, 2021. This is scan number 2751. We have a very special guest with us this evening. And you know all of our special guests are very special, but this guest is special to me. Her name is Darlene Clark, and to many of us, she is our NASCA sister. She is from Pulaski, Tennessee. And as I mentioned, she's a returning NASCA family member. I'll tell you a little bit more about Darlene, and I'll read her bio before we bring her on. But before we get started, I want to invite, we have a very, very active live and full panel this evening in support of Darlene, but if you wish to participate in our panel this evening, all are welcome. If you'd like an opportunity to interact with Darlene, our special guest, and ask her a question or pose a comment that is regarding her this evening, you are welcome to join us. All you have to do is dial the following number, 646-595-2118. Again, that's area code 646-595-2118. And you will be brought into our panel and have an opportunity to ask Darlene a question or pose a comment. So we encourage you to call in. Before I introduce Darlene, I want to tell you a little bit more about NASCA, because NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, as you know, is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and it's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional trauma and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. Our first goal, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts, showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing through so many different paths, such as these radio shows, providing many services to adults survivors of child abuse, and information for literally anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So one more time, that number to call in, be a member of our panel, no experience necessary, is that area code 646-595-2118. I want to remind you that NASCA is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We are fully funded through donations and through our members. So if you would like, we would very much appreciate a donation to NASCA. You can go on NASCA.org. That's NAASCA.org is our website, and there's a donate button where you can send a donation. Any amount helps. I'd like to tell you a little bit more about our very special guest this evening. Her name is Darlene Clark. Many, many of us know her. She is our NASCA sister from Pulaski, survivor of severe child abuse, and she's the author now of two books, Born and Living Hell, That One was her first book about her tortuous childhood. And recently, she's written a second book called Shattered Innocence. She relates, I was abused basically since birth. As a child, I had to believe everyone gets abused during growing up. She explains, from the army line of being whipped, either with a switch, a belt, or whip, to being shot at in my dad's crazy game of hide-and-go-seek and worrying about whether this was going to be the day they were murdered. When she was four, just 4 years old, these five kids were ages 2 through 6, and repeatedly abandoned by their mother at a grocery store, so her mom and dad divorced. Her father remarried, and Darlene describes, her father met her stepmother, and Darlene loved her because she fed them a meal every day. This was love. She gave them a bed to sleep in, and that was an upgrade. That was instead of having to eat raw oatmeal from a box because both the parents had abandoned the seven kids for a week. So the stepmom seemed much better to Darlene in her childhood and her siblings. However, her stepmom was crude, means no manure, dragged her through the house by her hair, kick her in the rump while she was doing dishes, when Darlene was doing dishes. And her stepmother would hold her down while her son raped her. Darlene even received beatings for sneaking out to worship God. Overhearing her stepmother, stepsister, and stepbrother planning to kill her and make it look like a suicide, Darlene escaped by marrying her boyfriend before the plan could be enacted. An online support group for Darlene inspired her to write her first book. Her first book talks about just some of the events Darlene endured as a child at 18 years old. However, she shares, I am triumphant over the abuse, so now I share my story to help others. So without further ado, Darlene, I humbly and proudly welcome you to the show tonight. I'm unmuting your mic.
Thank you so much.
Welcome, Darlene. Wow. I want to let you know before we start, you have got so much support. So as you know, Kim Lakin, my co-host, is on, Carol Levine, Peter from Ontario, John from Louisiana, Ambassador Nancy from, and I have a 304 number, 412. I'm not going to reveal who they are because I don't know their name. But I can see that you have a lot of support on the line. So we are all here. We walk with you, Darlene, and you know that we all love you, and you're in very good company tonight.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
So where do we... Oh, yeah. We appreciate you.
I could first start talking about the family dynamics.
Yeah, please fill us in.
Okay, Daddy Charles, you know, that's the dad that's supposedly my birth dad. He was in the United States military stationed in Germany. We met Hilda at a bar. Hilda already had two known children, Gerald and Angelic. Daddy Charles and Hilda had a child together, Gwen, in Germany. They brought Gerald, Hope, and Gwen back from Germany. While up north in the United States, Charles Jr. was Hilda and Charles moved back to the south. While serving at the arsenal, Marlene and I were born, and I supposedly kicked Marlene out. I was born about 20 minutes later. I was able to come home from the hospital much sooner than Marlene. I didn't know where we lived, but a great aunt helped take care of me. Later on, Hilda and Charles would abandon us for about a week. Angelica and Gerald were not allowed to cook at that time, yet the bottles needed warming. But back then, they weren't allowed to turn on the stove, so Marlene and I had to drink cold milk. Can you imagine having to take care of four children still in diapers? Marlene and I were infants. Charles Jr. was 1 year old, and Gwen was 2 years old. Gwen and Hope were 7-plus years older than me. Back then, there were cloth diapers. But you know how much more difficult that was. Angelica and Gerald had used T-shirts and whatever they could find. Aunt Zelda came over many times and would discover us abandoned again. She changed her diapers, fed us, and cleaned the house. She would then leave. When Gerald had good hearts, they were supposed to attend school, but they couldn't leave us without someone taking care of us, you know, the 2 1-year-old and the infants. One time, Daddy Charles got out of jail, and he was angry. The door was secure. I was around 2 years old. Daddy had a gun and was shooting through the windows. Shards of glass and splintered wood were going everywhere. My older sister pushed me to the floor and laid on top of my small body to protect me. A family member shared that story with me. When Marlene and I were 2 years old, Derek was born. While Hilda was still in the hospital, I had trouble breathing. I do not know what happened to Daddy Charles' vehicle at this time. He was running up and down the side of a major road to get help. A police officer stopped. He tried to give me mouth-to-mouth, but it didn't work. The officer drove Dad and me to the hospital. The emergency physician administered a tracheotomy. The doctor admitted me to the hospital to try to find the cause. I was there for 2 weeks, but they couldn't find the problem. I found out later that I was adopted by all the nurses. They sent me home with a big stuffed bear. When Derek was 2 years old, Hilda started abandoning the 5 of us in a grocery store. Gwen, Charles Jr., Marlene, Derek, and I were abandoned. Luckily, Gwen knew my aunt's phone number. He would come to pick us up. He kept us with her until Hilda came back to get us about a week later. I suppose Angelica and Gerald were in an orphanage at this time. My aunt grew tired of Hilda abandoning us. One time when Hilda came to pick us up, my aunt put up a fight and refused to let Hilda have us back. Hilda and Charles got a divorce and had a custody battle in which my dad won. Dad met a lady named Sue. Sue had 2 children named Bart and May. Bart was 2 years older than me, so it was my sister Gwen's age, and May was my brother Charles Jr.'s age. They married and later had a boy named Paul. I kept claiming that he was my baby. So that was that. Do y'all all understand about that?
So I want to just test my understanding, Darlene, giving us all that context on your childhood, your early, early childhood. So I just want to sort of recap and make sure that I can just, I'm going to generalize a little bit. It just sounds to me that there were there were a lot of kids in your household at a really, really young age. And that
right.
You were pretty all left to fend for yourself. Or the oldest ones, mm-hmm. which were still, I would consider, babies, really, but very young, were literally parenting and having to take over parental responsibilities for the younger siblings.
And they had it worse because they were, all they knew was German. They knew no English. So, according to my sister, my dad would not even let them eat because they said the right thing, what it was to food, you know, like a hamburger or like bread or something. They had to say it in English.
So food was used as a tool to get children to align, right? To get in line with the family expectation, right? You couldn't eat until you did the right thing.
Because he didn't want them speaking German, and yet they were born in Germany, and that's all they knew because even our grandparents had adopted them, so Mom was not supposed to bring them from Germany.
So they were punished from Germany and not knowing, they were basically punished for not knowing the language, which is just cruel and unusual punishment, you know.
I mean, exactly.
Kids are, they know what they know. That's just completely abusive. And
so how could they really tell? And then so when they're talking to us, and maybe worse, we sat and some at German back, and then they probably get in trouble if we spoke any German too, you know? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, these kids were in no one's
and
the theme that you all need to know.
There's a part of my sister's story, but this isn't really what I should go into, but this was something to give y'all an example how my dad was, the time when he was came and shooting inside the window. He just got out of jail because mom walked in on dad raping my sister, and then mama beat her, said, "You're trying to steal my husband." Then she later put him in jail, and then she went and got him out of jail. And then when he got out of jail, he was angry, so he tried to shoot through the windows. And she said he was aiming right at me, and me being 2 years old, I didn't know to duck down and hide. She said she had to push me to the floor and cover my body.
Hmm.
So
it's
I really feel for
even.
Them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel for them more than I do myself.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
There are, you know, there is a thought that, you know, there has been some data that has stated, you know, clinically that children that witness abuse, you know, is not only as impactful as the child being abused, but perhaps even more so, right? Those children that witness the abuse are the maltreatment is as severe as the children that are being abused. And I mean, just hearing from your voice and your words, I mean, when you're a child and you see this going on and you cannot do anything to help, the guilt and the shame that we carry and the memory, it compounds.
Yeah.
It compounds.
So many years after, you know, it took a while to get to the root of when the first sexual abuse had happened, right, with me. And it stemmed back to at 2 years old, I knew already not to cry. My first mom put my naked body on the kitchen table. Daddy was sitting at the metal table right beside his army buddy. And they opened up a beer at the side of it. Remember when the metal tables had the little rungs around the edges and people opened up their sodas and beers? And that's what they did. And mom told me I better lie still while he did this to me, that he gave her $30, about $30, if that's what I can remember. I'm sorry, I had another concussion. You know, so my thing is a little bit not remembering at all, you know. And but it was about $30, and I had to lay there, and my daddy stood behind the guy when the guy was using the beer bottle at me. So that was my first instances at the sexual abuse.
And you were three?
I was two or three.
You were two or three.
And I was told I better not cry, and I cannot even remember feeling the pain or anything. The next thing I remember is I'm in a bathtub, and it's about to my waist or a little bit higher than my hip bone, you know, and the water's all bloody.
Mm.
And I'm just sitting there like, what's going on, you know, but I knew not to cry out. I was in there alone. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't understand that that all was blood, you know. I didn't understand what that all was.
Towards my memory, the only thing I can say is that I think it's the courage and the strength that you have even right now to share what happened to you is remarkable, absolutely remarkable. You are remarkable. And no child deserves that ever, did not deserve that.
Right. Well, every child is a gift from God. They're not a waste to be thrown away or to be used or to be done however you want them to, you know, for your sexual gratification and all.
No, exactly. Or there are so many different types of abuse in your story, even from your earliest memory and your basically what you were born into. I mean, it's hard to even wrap one's brain around. And you experience this. It's hard for me listening and knowing you, and I know your story, to even experience hearing about it. I can't even imagine what it was like experiencing it in the first person. And between all the different types of maltreatment, they're just absolutely extreme and severe. Here you are, and we know you, and just you're remarkable. I mean, you're remarkable. You're absolutely remarkable. You just written your second book, and you never gave up hope, and you never gave up your faith. And I think it's important
to
mention that.
I beg to differ. There were times I gave up hope, and I did try suicide. And I was married at the time, and I was being abused when I was remembering some of these things, you know. And so at the same time, when I was remembering these things of past, then my husband was beating me also. And then the police said he could hit me all he liked as long as he didn't kill me. And the church said, you know, that's my only way to heaven is to let him go ahead and kill me. I'm such a bad person. I'm like, what is wrong with this society where I'm living right there in that area? I'm like, what is wrong? And, but anyway, I had a friend that told me if you got it in one of the support groups that we were actually in, where I had to go to a city and we were all in that one group. And so then we would meet at like a Waffle House afterwards. So I was at, he said, now sometimes when a Waffle House closes so that they can clean up, if you ever got to go to the bathroom, you can go to this certain place. You're okay. You're not going to be bothered, okay? One time I had to go to the bathroom real bad, and so I trusted her. She was wrong. He raped me.
Mm.
And I left there, and I didn't know how to deal with it because I went into a stranger's house. I believed her, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She set mm-hmm. me up. But then I started driving around, and then I found the exact place where Dad used to take me and throw me off his shoulder, and sometimes he would try to drown me in that river. And I found the exact place, and I had never found it before. And I said, Lord, this is the sign, then. I do got to go and kill myself, right? So I took an overdose. And then this big old white caddy come up, pulled up behind me, and I said, oh, no, Lord, you don't do this. Don't do this. Uh-uh. You know, you're not supposed to stop this, you know. No, you don't, you know. And so I ended up trying to back away and everything, and I finally got out of that predicament because that karma, I felt like, was going to try to stop me from doing whatever, you know. So I started driving, going down the road, and I was a danger to everyone. I was so, you know, it's a four-lane highway, and there was, in town, there was no grass or anything, thank God, and no ditches, because I was going all the way from the far right over here, driving all the way to the far left, crazily, like I was drunk. I was under the influence of, you know, killing me, you know, the overdose. So I said, well, I could just go on in this, you know, this bathroom and at this gas station and just dying there. Then also when I walked in, it was a teenager, though. A teenager. And I thought, I don't want to put this on a teenager's shoulder of them finding a dead body, right? So I said, I took an overdose. Go ahead and call 911. I don't want to lay this on your shoulder. I went off to the bathroom, came back out, and they said, you cannot go back. She said, cannot go back to the bathroom. I said, but I'm sick. I don't feel right. Then all of a sudden, this state trooper came up, and then he stood right behind me, and I collapsed back on his arm. But they saved my life that day.
No, they did.
Yes, I had given up. And the whole time I was in that emergency room, in and out of consciousness, every time I woke up, it was somebody with a glove that just kept rubbing my hand. It said, poor thing, you know, somebody must have really done some bad things to you. You know, they held my hand through it all. They did not let go of my hand. And that meant a lot to me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I feel like I also hear in that story that you did also save yourself. I think you did. You had a part in that. I think that I hear that there was a part of you. I mean, even if it was the excuse of not wanting to have that kid that, you know, clean up after you, I think that there was, that there had to have been something in you that did, you know, have at least a little bit of hope, you know, and really did not want things to end there. At least I feel like I'm hearing that, and I don't know if you agree with that or not.
I disagree with that because I was cussing because it's like, damn, everything's stopping it, you know, which I'm glad today. But I'm glad today seeing it, you know, and saying, yes, I did want to die, okay? But mm-hmm. I wouldn't have wanted them to find something like that, you know, some dead body or whatever, you know? I couldn't put that on somebody. That felt for that kid, you know?
You did. But here, look at the way that how you were born and how you were treated and the example that was set before you. And you still have that kindness. So that's just kindness. You know, you inherently have that in you to care after in a positive way. And where did that come from? I mean, that came from you. You didn't learn that from anybody else. And that is inherently what's in you. And that's why I know I keep going back to this. And I know that there's so many different, you know, side stories from the present moment that you're speaking about in your life and today. But when I hear your story, you know, and just the horrors, right, I have to remind myself about the present because that helps me. That I need to hear that help to know that, you know, your healing happened. You know, even though I know it did, it keeps me going forward, you know. I have to remind myself, right, because this is it's just so hard, you know, in terms of a lot of us can relate to it, these heinous crimes and what you endured to survive, what you had to endure.
Yes.
So I keep have to remind myself that here we are in the present day and you're doing amazing. So I'm gonna break to the panel because we have so much support on the line for you, Darlene, and we're almost 3 minutes in, believe it or not, if you're okay with that.
Yes, I'm fine. With that.
Okay,
yes.
So I'm just going to do it in the order in which everybody is up on my screen. So, Kim, I just want to invite you to join the conference with Darlene.
Hi, Darlene.
Hello.
And I know that I know you from probably NASCA from all the years of being on, but I don't think I've ever really heard your whole story. And I'm just so very sorry that all that happened to you. That just should not have happened, any of it. And I know we haven't heard all of it yet. So I'm just so sorry that happened to you.
But we could always turn it around and help others, right?
Right. Exactly. And that's what I was thinking about is, you know, all of us, I think, are NASCA to some degree. You know, we want to be able to help, and whether that is, you know, what you're doing, writing books are, you know, so helpful for people who are still healing, or, you know, whether doing art, like I know Carol Levine does, and or writing. So, yeah, it's just, it's a great way to heal, but you're remarkable, like Penelope said. You really are, to be able to be so resilient and come back from all this. And like I said, I know we haven't even heard your whole story yet, but my heart is just aching for all the children. You know, it's just not right. You didn't deserve it.
Yes.
None of us did. So
you didn't deserve it either. Okay. You didn't deserve it either.
Thank you.
And you were loved.
I know,
and you're
wanted. Thank you. So are you.
Yes.
So very loved. And now I'm going to have to read your book. I should have. Your new book. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
I don't want to take everybody's time. We got a big panel that's supporting you. So,
well, hugs to you. I could tell it's bringing tears to you. So lots of hugs to you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I mean, it just breaks my heart. It's just not right that there's so many of us out here. And, you know, I think like a lot of us do that my story isn't near as bad as.
But see, you can't compare abuse. I would tell you right there, your abuse is just as bad as my abuse, okay? It's just that some was done, everybody goes to different abuse, everybody's story is a little bit different, but there's no way to really put how abuse is so horrendous, no matter what was done and no matter what extent. So I will never say that my abuse is worse than yours, okay? I will never, okay? Because you're being abused was bad enough.
Yeah, it all is. It really is.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Well, I think it's really good, bro. You're doing it. Thank you, Ken, really. And, darling, because I think you brought up some really good points as well, you know, more generally speaking, in that abuse can be minimized, especially if we grow up with it and we think it's normal. But there's a lot of, I feel it, you know, in my own story, that there's a lot of minimization when we grow up, we're born into this, you know, sometimes we think that's normal, the abuse, and we expand on that. We're helping educate and, you know, people that are on the cusp of their healing process that may have been minimizing or not even realizing their abuse can now start understanding, really seeing it from a different perspective and learning. We mentioned not only all the forms of maltreatment that Darlene experienced, but also the sibling, just even for siblings to observe the abuse and the impact. So this is all really important.
Yes.
So I'm going to invite Carol Levine in, our NASCA Vice President. Carol, you are on with Darlene.
That's my little sis. Hey. She and I have many a conversation. I just love her. I love her to death. I know you do, honey. You know, we don't take yardsticks at NASCA, because trauma is trauma, like Darlene was saying. She said it very well, too. Yes, you did. You said it very well. And the things that you had to go through, going back to the bottle and the blood in the tub like you were describing, unfortunately, children, you know, can be abused at the age of one, you know, and a lot of times they use whatever. In your case, it was a bottle. You're very lucky to be alive even just from that, honey. Because what happens is if you try to shove a bottle there without getting too graphic, but the insides can actually suck into the bottle and children die that way. So you were very, very lucky. You were put on this earth for a reason, darling, because your story is so horrific. And many of us have horrific stories, and we all learn from them. And it makes me want to cry to think that you had to, you know, go through all the stuff that you went through. And then also to have others watch. And like Penelope was saying, they have come through studies now, just recently, where they're saying that even if you're an observer, okay, that is very, very horrific. And I went through that as an observer because I never got hit by my father anyway, my so-called father. My brother got hit. But I remember the fear, and my mother was pulverized. I remember the fear that maybe I'd be next. And as far as the other that you're concerned or talking about, all the other many things you've already, you know, given us to work with, it is hard for people to, you know, think like that. And Kim, for God's sake, whether your story is shorter or whether it's longer, they're all a little bit different. They're all different. But the thing to always remember is that trauma is trauma. And they say now that children who are sexually abused, especially, are like in the front line as with a soldier, because a soldier is standing there and trying very hard to protect his life, but also to go through what he has to do as a soldier. And that's why they come back with so much PTSD. And a child who is in the line, you know, you're trying to live. You're trying to survive. And you've got these people who are raping you. You have these people who are making you do other things. I know the rest of your story, so I'm not going to say any more. But the point is, you are a trooper, okay? You're very, very, very good, and you're good for a lot of people, Darlene. And you're certainly
Thank you.
A person of worth, and we all love you, okay? So I just want you to know that. I know you do. So I'll shut up now and let someone else talk.
Okay.
thank you, Carol. Carol always has a way of saying it
thank
and putting
you.
It all together. It just wraps everything up so nicely in the way she explains it. I just love to listen to Carol. So thank you, Carol. I'm going to bring on Peter from Ontario. Good day, Peter.
G'day, Penelope. G'day, Darlene.
G'day.
You're all with Darlene.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd surprise her because I knew nothing about her being on tonight, so I thought I'd just come on and see who was on so I can listen in. And I just want to say, Darlene, is that, God does have plans and a future for you, just like everybody else. And, you know, it's just amazing that, you know, we've been brought into this world for a reason. And, you know, without having to be the people that have been victimized. So all I can say, Darlene, you know, I'm not ready to say the word I love you just yet because it's something I'm still not quite used to saying to many people, and that you have my full support and my prayers will be with you all the way, Darlene. So you've always said to me, you're not alone, so you're not alone either.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And he'll be on my show next Wednesday.
Thank you, Peter. Thank
oh,
you
you're
so
welcome.
Much. Oops, sorry.
He did surprise me. Thank you.
mm-hmm.
Sorry, Peter, I didn't mean to cut your mic. I unmuted it again, but thank you. Thank you so much for being on tonight and supporting Darlene.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And I'm going to bring in my co-host, John. John, you're almost on.
Yes. How's everybody
Hello,
doing
John.
Tonight? Hello.
Fair to Midland, I suppose.
yes. Wow. I mean, where do you start with this? I mean, there's so much here that we need to recognize. One of our main things is to educate people, you know, that may run into this or may have run into it. And Darlene, your story kind of covers every part of it, you know, from the time that you were a baby, you know. And that's one thing I wanted to bring up, and I know Carol brought it up too, that we've all seen survivors that have came out when they were abused at the ages of 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, okay? And a lot of people would say, hey, you know, I don't remember, you know, what I did when I was that young. How could that be, you know? Well, I'm here to clarify what that's about, okay, specifically, is that it's about trauma, okay? Trauma will stay with someone when they've been affected that bad from a very young age, and it will live with them forever. So when somebody does bring the fact up that the age factors do come into play, you have to look at it from both ends, you know, not only at the young age, but also the old ages, you know. So with Darlene, you know, with your story is just, you know, incredible in every aspect. We need to know every bit of it, you know, in order to keep helping people exactly, you know, what you're doing right now. And yes, you were born a living hell, and yes, your innocence was shattered, you know. And those are the perfect, absolutely perfect names for your books. They really are, you know. And I'll tell you what really upsets me, though, is the fact that I wasn't there for you. You know, it really pisses me off. I'm sorry to use that language, but, you know, I love you. Everybody on this panel loves you. And we would have done anything in this. Unfortunately, things happened the way they did. But I can tell you this, is that you are changing lives every single day. You see, you know, we talk. I know you talk to several people that are on this panel, and every time that we speak, it's always, always about the future. It's always about the kids. It's always about positive, you know. And yes, you're right. There is not one case of abuse that I could put over another. I would never do that to anybody, you know, because the trauma that affects people from any age is horrific enough, saying that one is over the other. That is impossible in my eyes. You know, it's when our children are affected at a very young age, you know, there's a reason that things happen. And I think that the reason is that we were chosen. We were chosen to put an end to this crap, you know. And without you and without everybody on this panel and everybody listening around the world right now, you know, we can't do it alone, you know. And that just goes to show you that you will never be alone, you know. And that's what it's all about. You know, everybody that I know through NASCA loves you to the end of the earth. And I'll be right there with them every step of the way, darling, no matter what.
Thank you so
much. Okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, baby, you're welcome.
Love you, boy.
Oh. So true. Absolutely. Well, darling, I'm going to have Nancy, our West Virginia ambassador. Nancy, you are on with Darlene. Good evening.
Hi, Nancy.
Good evening. Hi, Darlene. How are you?
Fair to middle.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing with us tonight. I did get a chance to tune in, and I was definitely blown away by your story. I'm also just want to just tell you thank you for turning this literally and for serving and helping people who have been through similar trauma, you know, and probably not at your level or maybe not at their level, but like you said, it's trauma is trauma and pain is pain, and we are building a community. And thank you so much for stepping up and for sharing your testimony with so many. I'm a suicide survivor. I lost my sister 2020, the day after Thanksgiving, to suicide. So that's a cause that I stand very strong behind. And hearing that you're also a survivor, thank you. Hearing that you're also a survivor and that you're using your voice every day, you know, you're opening up the gift of life and you're sharing it with others by sharing your story. Again, I just want to tell you thank you. Keep going. Keep doing what you're doing. And God bless you.
Thank you so much. God bless you, too. And I'm glad that you're a survivor. And I'm sorry for the loss of your sister.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm a suicide survivor.
And God bless you.
I'm glad you overcame this, you know, the suicide that went on your part.
Right. Thank you so much. It's hard. I mean, and you get to that place. So I understand why people do it. But, you know, thank God that we're still here and, you know, we're using our voices. So, again, just thank you for sharing. And I just, you know, encourage you to continue doing what you're doing because you're helping change lives every day.
Well, thank you. I hope I do. That's my main goal is helping. If I don't think my story will help anybody, I feel like I'm a failure if my story does not help someone. Does that make sense to y'all?
Absolutely does.
Because it feels like, how can I turn all this bad into something positive? And the only way I know is to share my story and get it out there and maybe it would help somebody else. That's the only way I look at it in a positive light.
I think we can all resonate with that for sure. I hear you, Darlene. And thank you, Nancy. Thank
yes.
you for coming on.
And Darlene,
and
don't you think that's a good message?
Some people have asked me, said, how come, why are you thinking so differently about this? Aren't you pissed off at whatever just happened? I go, well, you know, if I want to heal, and I've been abused basically since birth, if I want to hold on to all that anger, I can imagine I could be a murderer out there. You know what I'm saying? All that rage. You know? But I have to say, God, I can't handle all this rage. I'm giving it to you. Because whenever I said that, I mean, it's like a whole weight that's been lifted off my shoulders.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say, well, that's impossible. I said, not if you feel the way I do about it. No, That can't be impossible. Cause, it's kind of funny, you know. I used to go to a bar and get drunk. I used to love to sing karaoke, okay? So I went to the bar, and just about every dance, I'd be out there dancing. And somebody said, I would like what she's having, right? And they said, oh, it's just a diet Sprite. And said, is that all she's having? No way. And they come up to me and said, what? You got to be mine. I said, I'm high on life. I'm high on survival. I am, you know, I don't need no pills. I don't need no alcohol. I'm just high on life.
That is awesome. That is awesome. And to me, that's also, you described really the calm and the peace and the lightness that comes from healing. And it comes from telling your story, you know, and releasing that because, you know, it's the suppression of that that weighs so heavily on us. And when you tell your story, you know, you do inspire others because you're giving other people permission to do the same. And we know we're just not alone. You know, when you can relate to someone's story, unfortunately, you just also know that you are not alone. But I keep bringing
right.
this up. And well, and by the way, thank you, Nancy. I'm going to mute your mic. But, you know, you are the epitome of in your story and being on here tonight that there is, you know, healing is possible. Healing is possible,
right.
And not only is it possible, but it's beautiful.
I know that y'all have wondered about the gun, you know, because I said I was shot at. And so, if that's, I could tell y'all about that if you would like me to.
Well, actually, Darlene, you know what? Before you do that, I have one more panelist on the line that I wanted to bring on before we go back. And I don't know this panelist's
okay.
name, but the number is 207-997. And I'm not going to say the last four digits just for the sake of anonymity, but I'm going to unmute your line, 207-997. I'm just going to invite you, if you'd like, to ask Darlene a question or a comment around her story, and you're on live right now, Darlene.
Hi there. This is Kathy, Darlene. How you doing?
Hi. Fair to Midland. How about you?
Oh, I'm fair to Midland just as well. I'm going to look forward to hearing your story about the gun, and I just want to call to support you. I'm looking forward to reading your book, and keep up the strength. It is, as everyone else says, to be admired.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And that's okay. You can go back. I just wanted to kick in here so that I could let her know that I'm here supporting her and all of you, all of us. You know, we've all been through hell and high water, and we're still fair to Midland. So.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. Where are you calling in from, by the way?
Maine.
From Maine?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you so
she
much
got
for calling in,
there. Stuff over there.
Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm up here in the woods. We got moose and bear, hon. Yeah. We're all right. But, yeah, thank you very much. And, yeah, it is horrible. It's horrible. I remember earlier one of the hosts, I can't remember exactly who our caller, mentioned how viewing the abuse is so horrible. And I'm being reminded, my sister, who's a year and a few months younger than I, some of the things she went through, she probably doesn't even remember. Well, who knows? but that were really very horrific when she was a year and a half, you know.
Right.
So it's right. Just really terrible things. But anyway, so carry on, and once again, thank you so much for coming in and spilling your guts.
Okay, thank you. At least they're still inside. They're not out any, you know.
You got that right.
I'm sorry, I have dorky humor, y'all, so please forgive me.
I'm no forgiving. I love it.
Great. Thank you for calling in so much, and now we've got you marked in our studio. So, Darlene, it is all yours.
Okay, well, thank you. And before I get to this about the gun, I want to say that I did find out when I was 4 years old that Daddy had me on the couch and he cut me with a knife between my legs, so part of me is missing. And I went to a doctor a couple years ago and for, you know, the gynecological exam, and I asked her, so please tell me whether part of me is missing down there, you know. And she looked and she said, yes, part has been surgically removed. And she validated it. Oh. Okay, to get on with the gun ordeal, Dad's version of hide and seek is what it's called, okay? This will be hard for y'all to read or to understand. It was difficult living it, but it validates I had God watching out for me. Although the cruelty had stopped, my life was spared. 10 years old, my dad came into the girls' bedroom. We all shared a bedroom as well as the boys. Daddy Charles walked in with a 12-gauge shotgun welded at his side. I thought, oh, no, here we go again. Dad replied, who is ready for hide-and-seek? If I see any of you, I will then shoot at you. I thought, one day, someone is going to get killed. I believe Dad recovered so well by claiming it was an accident. Like I shot a squirrel or another animal, but Darlene got in the way. That sort of excuse. We all ran and hid. I was not sure where everyone else hid. I often wondered where they hid because they hid so well. I ran and hid in a garden behind a hardened dirt mound. Dad was chasing Sue around the house and shooting into the sky. Sue was laughing gleefully as he was chasing her and shooting upwards with his 12-gauge. I briefly felt safe. It grew deathly quiet. I wondered where Dad was. I wondered if he was close to me. I prayed he got his mind on something else. Deadly game would be over. I looked up from behind the hard dirt pile. I did not see Dad. I drew in a deep breath as I laid my head down onto the ground. My heart was racing wildly. I was so thankful he was not around. I was thankful he did not spot me. I knew he always found me first. A few moments had passed. In which it felt like an eternity. I decided to look up again. Oh, no, Lord, please protect me. Dad saw me. He turned towards me and aimed his shotgun in my direction. I was praying hard. I knew I was dead. The next thing I knew, dirt went all over my body. I was shaking fearfully. After the dust settled, I noticed the rock that was right in front of my face. The dirt had it covered. The rock saved my life. I knew it was God who protected me. Oh, no, he's reloading while coming in my direction. It felt like everything was in slow motion. Dad was still approaching while reloading his 12-gauge shotgun. I knew I was dead. Something told me not to run. I was looking right in his face while I was approaching him, stood up and did as this inner voice was instructing me to do. I could not feel my legs or my feet under me. I felt as if I were floating. It felt like something was around me protecting me. I kept thinking, do not turn around and run. That is what he wants you to do, is he wants to shoot me in the back. There was nothing to run and hide behind anyway. I continued walking to him while staring into his eyes. I thought no matter what, I was dead. I felt I would be shot regardless. I walked on up to him, and he said, damn it, I wanted you to run so I could shoot you in the back. Dad turned his back towards me and said, I'm going to go hunt one of your siblings. I need to kill something today. I was scared and shaking all over. Dad turned his back towards me a few seconds later. He tackled me. He forced me to have sex with him. At least the other kids were safe momentarily. The craziness ended briefly. So that's the shot shooting at me ordeal of the games that he played with that.
Darlene, is your father still alive?
No, he died at 39.
Okay. Did you ever confront?
Did they ever what?
Go on. I'm curious, have you ever confronted your father before his death? What the nature of your relationship was like?
I did. A matter of fact, a couple of weeks before he left, and he told me it was all everything. He's sorry for all he did, but it was my stepmom who put him up to it. And I was thinking too much. I had bronchitis, excuse me, at the time, so he stayed home from church with me, and he made me peanut brittle and everything. And but I was so sick with a fever and everything, you know, the bronchitis is horrible. Got like close to pneumonia, bronchial pneumonia. And anyway, he blamed it on my stepmom. And when he was doing these actions, even before my stepmom came into the picture. So I thought to myself, you can't blame her. We need better than back talking, okay? So there was no way I could say something back to him about this, you know?
Just curious how you felt about his excuse, his sort of apology and the reason he gave. How did that make you feel?
Well, what else he had to say was really more bothersome than what he just got through saying. Because he said when he cuts back from this one job, he's going to take me away and he's going to divorce my stepmom. And he claimed then that he was going to marry me. And I said, Dad, you can't marry me. He said, well, when the church finds out the truth, they'll be allowed, you know, they'll allow me to marry you. Here I was, 14-year-old, still hadn't started my menstrual cycle or nothing, okay? I'm still really flat-chested, really short. And he was talking about taking me away and marrying me. Found peculiar, but he died on the job, so I never got that proof that he was talking about. And so I really felt like maybe he's not my dad, you know? Because
mm-hmm.
that's the only way I know a church would allow him to marry me if he wasn't my dad. And then when I lived in Florida, my mom got custody of us shortly after the gun game. And she had trouble taking care of me, you know. And so I got tired of, so I got this danger game I played, y'all. And it was with a train. It said I was tired of the abuse. I was tired of going hungry. By this time I was 11 or 12, okay. I was tired of having to take care of myself at the age of 11. It started innocently. It turned into a deadly game of risk, but I did not care. I thought if I died from it, that it was just my time. I doubted anyone would miss me. No one except people at school had seen me for days. I felt so alone. I had been so used to not eating that I could not eat in school. Whenever I opened the doors to the cafeteria, the smell of the food was nauseating since I was not used to eating anything except mayonnaise, ketchup, salt, and pepper sandwiches. That was all I usually had daily, and I was not going to beg for food. I was tired of being a twin. I was tired of people comparing my twin to me. I was me. I was an individual. I wanted to be myself. I grew tired of people saying I was a smarter and prettier twin. It might be a compliment to some, but I just wanted to be me. I wondered if Marlene had ever felt that way also. A year later, I found out the answer to this question. It seemed anytime someone asked what my birthday was, Marlene would come out of nowhere and say, don't forget it's my birthday also. I would reply, of course, they know we are twins. It infuriated me. We live right beside the railroad track. The train would usually be unloaded quickly. I had to walk to school. When I was at the other school, the bus would pick us up. My siblings had friends who took them to school, but no one would offer to take me. I had to walk to school, even in the storm. One time, I had asked Gwen if I could ride with her and a friend. When I asked, she and her friends left. The driver told me they would be glad to take me, but Gwen locked the door and instructed her friend to drive. I knew I would have taken them. I did not understand all this daily cruelty. My entire life was mostly cruel. One day I trained without a standstill on the track, blocking my way to school. I needed to get there. I did not want to be late. I decided to crawl under the train, but try not to get my clothes dirty. I was nervously thinking about different things. He says, what if the train starts moving? Would I have time to finish getting to the other side without getting hurt? Will anyone tattle on me? Phew, I made it. I went on to school that day. Later, I was playing hopscotch on the sand near the train track. I drew up the hopscotch board. Another train came. I started watching and paying attention to how the train moves when it starts. I kept my eyes on the wheels and the train tracks. Soon, I would notice the rhythm of the train. Another train stopped and decided to see if it's okay if I went under the train again. I did it. It felt exhilarating. I noticed it was still in a stop. I heard it start up. I wondered how many times I could get from one side to the other side before it go too fast. I kept playing that dangerous game numerous times. I stopped playing it after I tripped and slid. Rightfully, my foot hung up in between the track and the wood at the railroad crossing. Frantically, I tried removing my foot before the train ran over it. Luckily, I got it out in time. My shoe was still in between the rail of wood. I quickly retrieved my shoe. I fled away from the train. I knew how lucky I was to escape injury when I played this foolish game. I found out years later, a neighbor told Mom Hilda about the repeated going back and forth under the train, even when they began to move. Hilda informed her that it was okay. She was tired of me anyway. I laughed about it. I never wanted to live with her anyway. At the time, I did not understand why I was apprehensive towards her. It did not take me long to understand my reasoning. I had more pride in myself than to succumb to Hilda's wishes. When push came to shove, I cared. I stopped. I knew I had to be me for me. I knew when I grew up, I knew how I would love to treat my kids. I would daydream about having kids, taking care of them and their needs at 3 or 4 years old. I would hold them, kiss their cuts and ouches, and comfort them when they had a nightmare. Finally, yet most importantly, I would listen to them. By doing this, my children would know they mattered and their needs would be met. And what I'm talking about, my Hilda's wishes, she told me I need to go make money, and she told me I need to go prostitute myself out, get money if I wanted to eat. So how I ate was when she wasn't home, I snuck in the house and then made myself a mayonnaise, ketchup, salt and pepper sandwich, and then cleaned up and got out of there real quick before they ever got back home. And then whenever they went to bed at night, I went and slept in the back seat of the car. But my siblings were sleeping at friends and eating at friends. But I could not go, and I was not the type to go and beg for food, so I just did without.
Wow.
Okay, I guess we can stop right there.
Wow.
If y'all want.
I think I am gonna break the panel, but you know, I heard something in there. I've heard a little bit of this story before, the last time you were on the show, Darlene, but one thing I heard this time, you were forward thinking. You were forward thinking. You were thinking about the future and about changes that you would make. And that's
right.
You definitely, I just feel like through all this horrific abuse and neglect and just the most heinous maltreatment, so many times every time you're relating a story, there's an element of it where you're forward thinking. And you had that spirit within you. And the other thing that resonated with me, and before I go to the panel, is that, you know, I think we all can say, okay, there's times, you know, that I could have died, you know, I could have died. Whether it's regarding abuse or just being out in the world, you know, being in a car accident. I heard in your story, there are so many times you should have died that I definitely think that there's just your faith. I mean, you were given very clear messages that you were here for a reason. I'm hearing that. Thinking, you know what, every time I hear you relate a story and you have this, you know, this survival, right? You have survived and against the odds, and that you definitely have fulfilled, you're fulfilling, right? You are meant to be here. You were meant to be here. And I'll let you know that you were, the first time I came and told my story to the world was on NASCA. You were on the panel. So you said that to help change people's lives, me, you want to tell your story. Well, I'm going to tell you that you being on the panel, I'll never forget that. I'll never forget what you said when you came on. I didn't even know your story and how profoundly that helped change my life. And this wasn't even telling your story. This was you in support of me. I remember exactly what you said. It was life-changing. And that's why I'm here doing what I do. I hadn't even been on the panel when I came on the mask and told my story. So you are helping in so many ways that you don't even realize.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Don't bring tears to my eyes.
Yeah. I'm going to bring Kim on, invite Kim on. We're going to go through the panel very quickly one more time because we're almost down to 20 minutes left, and I know we still have some things to cover. So, Kim, I wanted to invite you back in the conversation with Darlene.
Hi. Hey, Darlene.
Hello.
I had written down a question to ask you, and then you kind of answered it because, you know, a lot of times when you're in, you've got a bunch of kids in a family of abuse, either they stick together, I think, or they kind of, you know, fight then for themselves. And it sounds like maybe at least some of your siblings had that mentality that, you know, I am going to get what I need, but I'm not necessarily going to always let you in. And that's got to be so lonely. I'm sorry that you went through that as a child.
Thank you.
Lonely.
There were just five of us that went to live with my mom, and we were supposedly full-blooded. And I was even told right after the court case, and that's why I don't believe the DNA results at Ancestry, you know. Because I know the government looks to it first, but the government's hiding my secrets. They won't let me have them. I was born after Arsenal, by the way, back in 62. There's a lot of secrets back then.
Oh.
Wow. So they won't let me have my medical records or nothing from back then.
Wow.
But there
Are
was just five of us living at the time. Huh?
No, go ahead.
There was five of us living at home with my both mom and my stepdad, and I couldn't understand why the system even put me with her and him when he was on probation 26 more years for murder.
Oh, wow. The system
See how the system
up.
Fails?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of messed up. I mean, it's just about everywhere. Are you still in contact?
Well, I said he never. Huh?
Are you still
well,
in contact with your siblings?
Well, my siblings, my older sibling, Sabina, Hope. My older sibling, Hope, she don't like writing to me because she found out that my daddy treated me the same way that he treated her. And so now that it's kind of hard for her to write to me because she feels the pain that I feel. And so, and then I got another brother who's since passed away. And I got a sister that's a preacher. And I have nothing to do with her because she said that all the things that happened to me was God's punishment for me being a bad girl and putting the sexy reason age too. So that talked to me, stay away from her, stay away from my brother who says that I should look at my dad as a hero because of all the kids he raised. And I said, it's not about the kids you raise, it's how you raise the kids, how you treat them, you know. And so I had to do away with him because he was violent during the discussion when my mom died, which I could end up, when I'll make sure that that will be one of the last things I read or something, and so that y'all would know a tidbit on that, you know. And then I got a twin sister, and I got a brother I talk to every now and then, but not close. But, so I'm basically here alone, and my kids are in different states, too.
No, that's got to be really hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, yeah. I got family here at NASCA and at other places, and I'd rather, you know, be online with all y'all, maybe meet some of y'all some of the time or something, you know, but I feel like y'all's more of a family to me than my own family was, okay?
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I can relate.
Thank you for sharing.
I talk to my family, don't I? I talk to y'all. Y'all my family, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, we are.
That's right. Well, I'll let you go. But thank you, darling.
Well,
it's nice hearing you share your story. I'm keeping you in my prayers.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to bring on Carol. So Carol, I'm unmuting your mic, and you're back on with Darlene.
Yeah. You know, you said something way back when, too. You've said so much. But, you know, there's and Penelope also. Penelope, you brought that in. And there is, you know, when you're a survivor, when you're trying to become a survivor, there's a part of you that wants to die, and there's a part of you that wants to live. And you don't know which part's going to win because the situation is so bad. And certainly in Darlene's case, it was horrific too, you know. I know I ate salt and pepper sandwiches too. I almost started to laugh. I know what that tastes like. Oh, yummy. Oh, my God. But what I'm trying to get to here is that all of a sudden something happens inside of a person. When you decide you don't want to die anymore, then all of a sudden you stiffen up and you become tough. And you see, Darlene has that same toughness. She and I both have that. It's a toughness about us. And we want so much to live. And many people in NASCA have that same attitude that we want to help other people because we made it. And, you know, I look at it this way. All those brothers and people that I, you know, people that were supposedly in my family, and I had my DNA done also, a lot of them weren't even related to me. And let me tell you something. We can't choose. I told someone that today on the phone. You can't choose your family. You can only choose your friends. And that's the truth. And here at NASCA, we are family. So even though we may not have too many family people in our life, I might have a couple. I have two people in my life outside of my children. I have two children also. So I feel that that's good enough. And you know what? I have people at NASCA, and then there are a few other people outside of NASCA, of course, and they become our family. And that's
right.
A good thing. That's a good thing because those relationships, these relationships are good. And what we do here at NASCA is to help build each other up if we need it, and certainly to encourage others to get help. We use the platform here at NASCA, okay, because you can tell your story. And the more people, Darlene, I've said this before and I'll say it quickly, when I wrote my book 10 years ago, Panic Child, there was only one other book on Amazon. Now, you go on Amazon today, how many books do you see? That means people are talking. Yeah, but that's a good thing, right? That means people are talking. We're the pioneers, and we're still working so hard. So our voices are being heard. Our voices are being heard, and that's a good thing.
Yes, it is.
Yes. So I'm proud of you, girl. I'm proud of you.
I'm proud of you, too.
Thank you, honey.
Thank you.
Ah, thank you, Carol.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Dr. Carol Levine, Fearless Vice President of NASCA. I always appreciate Carol's comments. I always learn something from Carol every show. John, I wanted to invite you back in to the conversation with Darlene.
Hi, Darlene.
Hello.
You know, Carol just got finished saying is probably the roots of the cause of who we are and what we do, right? You know, we all have many years of experience, but at the end of the day, if we didn't have each other, we wouldn't have anything, you know, because it's a team effort here. You know, I have my own organization, right? You all have NASCA. I work with you. I will always be with you all. Even though I have my own, I don't classify it as a different organization. I look at it as one whole because of who you are and who we are. We do the same thing, except we just handle different areas and different people. You know, the thing about the beauty of this is that whenever you come on and tell your story, like you did tonight, okay, you're actually benefiting me. You're benefiting Penelope. You're benefiting Carol. You're benefiting Peter and everybody that's listening. You know, right now we have the entire Northeast continent covered, okay, with everybody between, you know. So I do have a question for you more than anything besides that comment, and to tell you that I do love you very much, by the way. What is your main thing that when you said you were sitting at that bar and you had a Sprite, a diet Sprite, and you didn't need alcohol and you didn't need drugs to get you high, but you were high on life, right?
Right.
And people really that haven't crossed over to that you know, path yet kind of need to really know what that's like in a sense. So what was it for you that took you to that so they can get a good sense of what decision did you make in order for you to get to that high on life, being a sexual abuser and being tormented and being brainwashed and beaten and everything under the sun? You know, this is probably one of the worst cases that I've heard from every standpoint of the aspect of being abused. What was it for you?
Well, the one thing that you think about is I got away from the toxic people in my life. I did away with my evil stepmom, one that held me down while her son raped me and I had that baby in a third girl about. But that's in the book,
right.
If y'all want to know more about that story. But a child of innocence. But anyway, when I thought, you know, when I got away from my abusive husband, too, you know, and so I felt freer. I was not being abused every day. I was not being starved. He was forbidding my kids to bring me any food when they broke a new bone in my body every 2 weeks. Where I was.
So you stood up. You stood up and you made a stand, didn't you? And you just said enough is enough, and that's the way you went about it. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I thought, well, my kids wanted to protect me, and I thought, why should I make them protect their mama, and they end up maybe killing their daddy, and that would be on their conscience for the rest of their life? I'm the adult. I got to make a stand, and I got to get out.
Right. And you know, we only have about 15 minutes left, but the other little question I have is about the way that you came forward, and what is your advice for people to come forward that may be wondering how to do that, and what is it going to take, and what to expect?
Well, sometimes you might have some wrong people that you tell, and they'll disbelieve you because you might have a smile on your face. But you got a smile on your face possibly because you're nervous about telling. Continue to share your story. Continue. Because there will be somebody who really believes you. So continue to tell it till somebody starts listening to you. There's plenty of sites like NASCA. There's like what John's got. There's been even Snap where even priests have messed with people, not just priests, because it's not just Catholicism. It's any kind of religion, you know.
Right.
And so it's very vast, and, you know.
Yes, it is.
And I think the main thing is finding a therapist that believes you and tells you you are believed, and that's what turned it around for me.
Yeah, and actually, that's a great point. It's finding that right therapist. Don't you agree, Darlene? Is that not every therapist is for everybody. You know, it might not be the first one you see. You know, sometimes I've heard of stories of people going to 10, you know, before they found that one. I've heard people from the beginning were absolutely fine. You know, but it doesn't mean that you have to stop at that, right?
Right, because I was sexually assaulted by my first therapist, matter of fact, too. Because we didn't have insurance, and the elder at church knew the therapist, and he said they had to do unconventional therapy to get me to, you know, do these certain things to make me do better, something like that. That's a crock of bull crap.
Yeah.
But I'm glad when we had insurance, and that one psychiatrist, he believed me. And that changed my world around. And he even wanted me to see that therapist. And but I had trouble going about to do that since my husband wasn't standing beside me. It's like we gave him authority to be able to do these sexual things to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I am so proud of you, Darlene. I can't tell you enough the impact that you're having, okay, on the world. Okay, on the world. You hear me? There are people that are contacting me right now. What a great show. You know, and it's true. And you are one of our leaders, and we work together. We're all warriors, and we love you very much, okay?
Thank you. I love y'all, too.
Thank you, John. He said it so well. So I've got a number, 682-710, and I'm going to unmute your mic. 682-710, your mic is unmuted, and I'm just going to welcome you to offer a question or comment to Darlene.
Hey, it's Richard Wayne. I wanted to say that I bought Darlene's book as soon as it came out, and it's just an incredible journal of a very, very tragic story. The scene where her father is chasing her and her siblings in the backyard with a shotgun. I felt like I was actually there. It was some of the most riveting and terrifying things that I've ever written. I mean, it's a great piece of writing. And I just echo what everybody else says. You know, I've gotten to know you, Darlene, you know, over the past couple of months, I appreciate your friendship and everything that you do for everybody else, and I'm very proud to know you.
Thank you. I'm very proud of you. You and John are go-getters, I tell you.
I'm so mad at your father. You know, I just want to know where his grave is so I can dig him up. And I think John would join me on that journey.
The psychiatrist had told me years ago that he wanted to dig him up and blow him up. And you know what I told him? I said, no, please keep him in the ground because we don't want any of his remnants floating around in the air.
I love you guys, and I'm going to check out. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Thank you
for coming on, man.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, Darlene, I think you're completely justified in that position. I think you have all of our support on that one, you know.
And I look at him, you know, when I go back and I look at my family and all that, I can't be angry. I feel sorry for the kind of people they are, you know. I feel sorry for them, but that don't mean I want to have anything to do with them ever again. I could forgive them, but that don't mean I want to forgive and forget. Mm-hmm. I don't forget. If you forget, you're bound to keep repeating the same thing over and over.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think that's a great statement that you just made, Darlene. And by the way, Carol, I'm going to unmute your mic because it's John, Carol, Kim, Darlene, and myself left. It was the last 4 minutes of the show. And I think you just, you know, what you said is so profound, and I think it's worth those that are listening that may be, still having some of the people that in the family, we talked about family members, that may not want to accept our truth. Darlene put it perfectly. Well, I feel sorry for him, but you know what? She did not deviate from her truth. And, you know, we know what the truth is, and I think, you know, whether it's a therapist that doesn't work for you, You got to keep moving forward. And, you know, the truth, we got to get it out. We got to keep it out there and to remain strong in that position. And I think, Darlene, you know, that really encapsulates, I think, the strength that you have. And you were true to yourself and true to your truth. And you never stopped telling your story and being honest. And that has also kept you moving forward in the healing journey. Because those disbelievers will try and, you know, stifle us to bring us back into the silence. And as we all know, silence is the most prolific enabler of the type of abuse to continue.
Can I say something one time, right quick? And,
yeah.
Okay, after I just uncovered all that, right, and then I ended up moving away after I divorced, I had another therapist that was horrible, and she told me that that I wasn't abused by my dad, but I wanted him to sexually abuse me. And I'm like, what? I had that covered so long, you know, about it happening, and now you're telling me I wanted it to happen? I made sure that my family doctor found me a therapist and made it where I could see somebody in her office.
Oh, I'd have had her removed.
It was?
Yeah, I would have had her removed. She has no right to make that comment to you.
Yeah.
Right. And so if y'all come across and you hear that kind of thing from therapists, tell. Don't hold it in. Get help wherever you need help. It ain't worth you being violent and you going to jail over something when that perpetrator deserves to go to jail.
That's great advice. That is great advice. And I think we have to trust our intuition on that as well. If you feel like a therapist is not a good fit for you, if you feel uncomfortable to that point, find someone that you do feel comfortable with, because there are good helpers out there. Don't give up.
Right.
So, Darlene,
with the internet, there's a lot of people that can help you find a good therapist and the way also that you may not know about.
Right. Both exactly. Of organizations, we can help you with that also. You know, of course, we're not all doctors here, but I think a lot of us have a lot more experience than any doctor I've ever met in this category. You know, so
right.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
Well, absolutely. And Darlene, I cannot believe we're down to the last 60 seconds. And I just want to say, on behalf of NASCA, it's just been a privilege to have you on the show tonight and an honor to have known you. I know I can speak for everybody on the panel and you know, for the organization. You know, it's just a blessing to the organization. You've given so much in terms of your truth, in terms of your support. You've helped so many people within NASCA, and we just really appreciate you. And with all my heart, I just wish to thank you. I wish to thank you for coming on tonight. It was really with gratitude, you know, to
yes,
with
very
John
good show.
And with Tim and with Carol on the panel tonight so much. And as I always say at the close of the show, it is all of our responsibility to keep our children safe. We all have eyes as adults. There are enough eyes on this planet to keep every child safe. So if you see something, you have to say something. Protect our children. I wish to thank you and wish you all good night.
Good night.
Yeah, good night, everybody.